heroes, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. Today's guest is Glenn Given, one-third of the game-making collective Games by Playdate. They made Slash, the fanfiction card game you've probably heard of, and lots of other games you may have not. It's a fun and silly episode, but we do have a brief discussion around self-harming behaviors. So if that's a difficult topic for you and you decide to listen, please make sure that you're in a safe and comfortable place before you do. Other than that, it's all giggles, as usual. Let's get to it. Yeah, Glenn, how you feeling? How you doing? You seem excited for the interview. We've been having some lovely chatter.
I am excited, really excited for the interview because I really enjoyed listening to Backstory and I really like listening to you say multiple syllable words.
Oh, perfect. I'll try to get a handful of them in. We'll see.
and also I'm recovering from dental surgery, so.
Yeah, you're way more lucid than I saw on Twitter that you were going to be having a root canal or something. And I was like, nice, he's going to be doped up and mouth full of gauze. But
yeah, and I have like real bad anxiety about dental stuff. I get like, I don't know if you've ever been around a person with like a real nasty anxiety disorder. Okay, then that's half of this conversation. So I was thinking about it today as I was getting drilled and probed in my tooth and stuff that I have this perpetual fear that I'm going to chomp down really hard right while they're drilling on my teeth, which is terrible.
Yeah.
And that, but you never do it. You're never going to do it. It's not going to happen because that would be, I mean, insane. It'd be terrifying. And just the idea, just contemplating it, like gives me rigor mortis. But that's kind of what having anxiety disorder is like all the time. Yeah. It's like, oh, at any moment, I'm going to bite down on a drill bit. that's why I make games.
I was having a conversation with someone last night, actually, about why analog games in general are becoming very popular. And I think maybe it has something to do with like the soothingness of knowing that there are rules and that there are like, you know, what you have to do and what is expected of you. I don't know.
I think that's definitely on the right path. I mean, I always figured that as our lives become more electronic in like the very Marshall McLuhan-y sense, as we're like connecting with the machines around us, we lose time for face-to-face. We lose time for human interaction, but that's really important to us psychologically and emotionally and socially, obviously. So analog games, specifically the resurgence in board games of the past decade, in a world that's increasingly imposing its digitalness on your attention span, analog games are an exceptionally efficient way of scheduling FaceTime with people, mm-hmm. right? So like it instantly gives you a thing to do, a place to be, and like a structure so that there's not that pressure of what are we doing? Or like, you know, do you guys all want to get together for this? It's an easy yes for people. And especially when it comes to things like LARP or RPGs, the range of interactions you have with people can be really, again, I mean, maybe it sounds weird and cold, but you can really efficiently get emotions back and forth between people. I mean, I think that makes some kind of sense.
No, definitely. And I think like LARPing and tabletop role-playing too is a way to sort of leap into a kind of intimacy or to get the feeling of intimacy with someone, because you can jump right into our characters have this super intense relationship and they've been married for 12 years and one of them just had an affair and whatever. And so you can have kind of like have these intense experiences or intense emotions, but in a way that also you can step away from as needed.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really great things about role-playing. And that is also one of the hugest barriers to role-playing, is that the ability to go, yeah, okay, let's do this. We're on with each other and we're going to have this connection that's completely ginned up in the moment. And it only exists because we're saying yes to what each other is saying. And that speaks to me coming out of like getting a theater degree, which is why I don't really have a job, because I double majored in theater and philosophy. But yeah, it's that like that improv attitude without the horrible tackiness of improv.
Yeah. And without the assumption of like there's going to be some sort of performance, right?
Yeah, I must have been on your show, someone was saying that like one of the great differences between LARP or RPG and improv is that the implied audience is not an other, right? It's mm-hmm. it's you. So it's you're acting just for you and the other actors, which seems really pure, but it's also weird when you think about it. I don't know. It makes me approach like RPG and LARP games in a really strange way because I want to observe them first and understand them from like a bird's eye view before I am willing to engage in them.
Interesting. And I think that's hard because I think like actual plays exist, obviously, and some of them are awesome and super entertaining, but I don't think it really gives you, I don't think it really tells you what it's like to play a game necessarily. Like it doesn't, it's not the same as having that experience by a long shot.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, well, not obviously. I don't mean to be like, no. you know, like being in the audience of a show is not like being on stage. Even the most wacky fourth wall breaking, you know, alt theater experience mm-hmm. of like the McKittrick Hotel thing or whatever they do. It's not the same as being a scripted performer, and it's not the same as being as an innocent audience. But I, like that doesn't interest me so much in the same way that acting never interested me. Because I don't think I'd be very good at it. And I'm much more interested in setting up scenarios or setting up systems for other people to act within, to do like directing and stuff like that. Or in the case of game creating, like make the thing and then watch the people enjoy the thing.
Interesting.
Well, then I don't have to worry about my own failing, except in a really detached way. But I also don't have to worry about like filling up the room with my ego.
Right.
Which is something that I have a history of doing. So like if you know that you're a bad actor in the sense of a person who does jealous things or a person who manipulates situations, if you're that kind of a bad actor, not like a terrible actor, but you love the thing that acting is in, you have to find a way to get the hell out of it and let it be something really beautiful. And I don't think that I can do that as a player. So I'm really trying to do that as a person who makes games.
To try to get away from being like game design as a way to escape being a player. I want to engage with this thing, but not necessarily. And that is funny because we think of that when it comes to theater as being so obvious that if you're a director or a set designer or a writer, that doesn't mean you're an actor. But in games, it's sort of an assumption that if you're making them, you must be playing a lot of them.
Yeah, I think you need to play them to understand the experience and to get perspective on them, and because they're wonderful and enjoyable. And not to say that playing is not great. I'm saying that maybe there are certain people who for whom being the player is not the most creatively additive role that they could have. Right. It's like there are some people, if you look at like traditional Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, there are some people who are just going to be better at being a DM than they are going to be at being a player, and vice versa. And they might have a lot of trouble with cooperative games. And then there are some people who can only do cooperative games. They can't handle the antagonism of having like one powerful force kind of trying to stop them throughout the game system. You know, there's all those different types of people engaging in the experience, just like you would have in theater, people who are there for just the escapism of it, people who are there for more challenging emotional intercourse. I don't know. Those are the words that came to my mind.
Challenging emotional intercourse. That's going in the description.
Yeah. And I think, you know, games are really great at doing that. I lost my train of thought a little bit. Yeah, so I was at Metatopia wasn't the last one. Dreamation was the last one. Right. And I don't usually play LARPs or freeforms or whatever. In fact, I'm really skeptical about all the definitions of what they are. Because it reminds me a lot of my first few years of philosophy, which is people trying very, very hard to define things because they think that taxonomy equals answers.
Right. Yeah. And to name something is to own it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then there's this guy called Wittgenstein, and I'm sure. Oh,
that motherfucker.
So he has this really great idea that definitions, this is obviously hugely paraphrasing, but yeah. That's not really how things work. They just have like, you know, they have like familyness to it, or it has, this game has LARPness to it, or this has tabletopness to it. And that's really a much more realistic and actually useful way of doing it. But it's really hard for certain people to wrap their brains around, because it's not a flip to this page, get the definition thing. So a lot of the whole like defining what Nordic LARP is versus American LARP. What's
fruitful enterprise that is.
Yeah, great. That's a lot of people with glasses and scarves arguing. They're awesome. As I have a scarf on. Anyway, so, and the same thing with games when it comes to like the digital to analog spectrum, or what about board games like XCOM that have digital components but are like strictly move pieces around on a board game? What about weird role-playing digital games like Majestic, which like faxed you things and called you on the phone in 2002 and like you role-played with? Like, what the hell was going on there? Like, you can't just say that those things are one or the other. And so like that kind of taxonomy really rubs me the wrong way. But I guess the point of my story was that I ruined another game just by being in the same room as it.
What game? I must know.
So there was the... at Dreamation, there was the sampler of...
The Golden Cobras.
Yes. So I got to ruin that. So
that's,
I
was a, in that's that, like a bunch of games. How did you ruin them all?
Oh, because I'm great at this. So we went down and we played Nemesis 382, which is a really, really, really cool game about approaching a black hole and then encountering weird happenings. And it was a tremendous amount of fun. And in fact, that like when I went down to the Golden Cobra thing, I was like, I'm just going to go and I'm just going to observe because I want to see people playing these games and really kind of enjoying it. But I got into this game and I really, really liked it. And I was like, I thought it was going to be much more frou-frou-y. I have to do like full bleed improv acting and I'm not going to be good at that. But instead it was more like what I think of like a Fiasco or a story gaming kind of thing where you're just riffing and you're creating something together. It's like a very campfire-esque scenario. And then me and one of the other people, we're having a tremendous amount of fun and we're talking. And it ends up that we're having such an enjoyable time that we're like crowding out the other group of gamers who are in the room with our excitement. And So we had fun in our game, but it was probably only at the expense of someone else having a nice time. So and that's why I don't want to be a player.
So like a small group of players within a single game, or like there was another game in the same room?
Another game in the same room. Ooh. And I mean, that's not a great scenario, but not having the maturity to restrain yourself and your enthusiasm is what made me drown out the other people. So I can't do that. It's bad. It's a bad.
There's a lot of interpretations to that experience though in that event, because like LARPs, like there's a reason if you go to Dreamation and you play a tabletop game, you might be in a room with like two or three other tables. But if you play in a LARP, you will probably almost assuredly be in your own room. And I think as much as like we want to break down, you know, the difference between tabletop role playing and live action role playing, that is something that I try to break down all the time. At the same time, like I really, really think that like ideally, if you're in a LARP, you should be like in a sealed like bunker, like away from the world. Like you're trying to get into this altered state of consciousness, and like you can't have people around harshing your buzz.
Yeah. That is very much like that. Like you're on stage, even though you're on stage only for yourself. That said, even if there was no one else in the room, like there is a tendency of certain types of players to just fill up space with their energy and with their enthusiasm, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not malicious about it, or at least I don't think that I am. Mm-hmm. But it crowds people out, and that's really bad for like what my long-term goals of game making are. Mm-hmm. Because I don't need more people like me around, because that would make me jealous. But also, like, it would be a cacophony. Like, I want more nuanced people of completely different backgrounds. I want to go to a party that's full of everybody coming from a different place, not just 500 Glens in a room, like yelling at the top of their lungs about how cool their space laser guns are. Like, that's not good.
I don't know. I feel like maybe if there are Glens about, we should put all the Glens together where they can just like Glen all over each other. You know what I mean?
It sounds.
Your face is not agreeing.
Well, the way you said Glen all over each other was kind of interesting, but I just, I don't know. I think that could be really bad. I just want more people doing these things. And the way that people have been going about making games, I don't think is getting more people. It's getting more from the same people or occasionally getting some new people in. It's very passive type of outreach. You know, there's a lot of really amazing games, just like there's a lot of really amazing theater, but the most amazing stuff, until like in theater you get like a Hamilton that really starts to really cross over into mainstream stuff, there's that bougie bullshit where if something is too mainstream, it can't be good and it can't be considered like hip or whatever, and that's dumb. You know, like, play with more people, play with people who you never expect to play stuff with.
So would you say that a design goal of your collective, Games by Playdate, is to make games that people who don't play games will want to play?
Yeah, I think that's something we go for. We expressly ask ourselves when we're making games, will this game look like we're having fun while we're playing it, right?
Oh, that's very interesting.
Because we want, if there's a room full of people playing games, I mean, there's something like strategic about this and very, shrewd. We want people to see our table as the people who are having the most fun, the most visibly interesting, right? Because we want people to come over and stand and watch and want to participate. We want it to be, you know, we want it to be sexy for people. We want it to have real peacocking presentation and stuff, but in a very passive way, because that gets more people interested and it gets more people wanting to buy our stuff, which is really cool when I need to pay my mortgage, that people sometimes do that. So,
right. So even though there's such a clear difference between looking like you're having fun and having fun, and how you can be doing one or the other without necessarily doing both.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't think we've run into the situation where we're making, like, we're not making a super laugh a minute version of Some Kind of Lovin' or something. Like, it's not a game where you're gonna, like, most of the stuff we make, that's not right, because I make a game about non-suicidal self-injury and that doesn't seem like a lot of fun.
I was going to mention that exact game. Tell our listeners what that, I forget the name of it. It's
called Bad Habit. It's named after the Dresden Dolls song about self-mutilation. And Erjin Taminga, who is a designer from Boston by way of Denmark, he made the game Pleasant Dreams, which is a cool little dream card game. He told me that I couldn't make a, that board games couldn't make people feel emotions, is me paraphrasing his challenge. And my assessment of that was that, no, they just don't. And they don't because of the people who tend to be making board games don't care about doing that,
right?
It's just, that would be like saying films can't make a person cry, but like, obviously they can, as long as the people involved in making that film have an interest in doing that, right? And so it's like this weird backup argument to auteurship. But yeah, so then my intern at the time had a history of self mutilation, and I have had it, and one of my partners has had it, and other people we've known and have it. And it's a weird and tragic and extremely awkward disorder for people to have. But what we discovered when we were making this game is, because we obviously didn't want to make it to be like making fun of things, but games and simulation and kind of experiential models like LARP and tabletop and all analog gaming and all gaming can be, can teach you things in weird ways that just reading them or being told them can't, right? So like, if I just like tell you the trick to helping someone who practices self-mutilation is that you should be patient and empathetic, that seems really straightforward. And maybe that's a lesson that you can take to heart, but there's a difference between knowing that and understanding it, or like really processing what the practice of that is. And so simulation in gaming is a really cool medium for communicating experiential knowledge to other people, even if it's really poor at communicating literal knowledge to other people, right? Because there's so much interpretation in it, which is why stories in most video games really suck. Because if you want a strong story, you're not allowed to, you can't have choices.
Interesting.
So yeah, so Bad Habit is this game where everyone is has these weaknesses about them, or they have these concerns about them. And then as you work through this deck of things that you might hear people say, they trigger you to harm yourself. And then as a community, so you all win or lose together. So as a community, what you need to do is pay attention to how everyone else is being triggered, and then offer to help them, but not over offer to help them, right? Because if you're accusing people of being overly sensitive about stuff, like you're not only you're helping, but you end up harming them more. So like one of the mechanics of the game is that if I say, you know, Alex, you're suffering from hopelessness, and you're not, then you end up having to, in the game, take another token out of this bag that represents scars that you're giving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But every time you do that, there's a chance that you pull a token that ends the game completely because someone right. in the community has died. So right. the way to win is to be patient and observant and really just kind of play it smooth and listen to one another. And you will lose if you're looking at your phone during the game. And mm-hmm. it's weird. So I made that, and then I showed it to my intern, and my intern started crying. And then so I called up Airgen, and I laughed at him.
Wow. The cruelest victory.
The cruelest victory. But yeah, that's been really good. And we only just started selling it online now because we don't want it to be perceived as – we don't want people to pick it up having the wrong understanding of what it is.
Yeah, totally. And you have really to – present that in a particular way and not as like all of the horrible ways you could sell something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's easy to make a buck off of someone else's misery.
Yes. And it's easy to purport to just be like an empathy game or an awareness raising game it's all about visibility and representation. Because as long as we're talking about something, it must be helping.
Because nothing has solved a problem like raising awareness of it.
So yeah, no, I see that. But I do think it's interesting. So that is a game that, I mean, I don't know, would you describe it as fun? And does it look like it's fun when you're playing it?
I think if someone's passing by and they see us playing it, it doesn't look like a lot of fun. So that probably fails our own test. But it's also the kind of thing that we made it, and I had someone just tell me that it was important that I make it. And so that I was like, okay, well, I can't not do this now because I've got one thing in my life that I'm probably maybe talented at. I'm certainly not going to turn away from any kind of meaningful praise that I get for work that I do. So yeah, I'm taking this all the way. So we did that, and it's been really well received, and we've been very modest about it. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's like 10 Super Bowls. It's like the coolest thing. It's
great. Fucking rad is what it says on
them. Fucking rad. And then there's, you know, like when a wrestler walks into the arena and just there's some, it's like John Cena. It's so good.
And they do a little with their, yeah, but, I can vaguely.
But with patience and empathy.
Patience and empathy.
Lightning. Oiled up chests.
Let's talk about a completely different game that you made.
Okay.
That game's by Playdate made. By the way, what's it like designing in a triad?
I like to think of it as remember when you were really, really young and you went bumper bowling?
Yes.
Right? So like a tremendous amount of the work that Meg and Dan do is prevent me from completely going off the rails with stuff. And then right. when we have like when kind of the lead design is shifted, I, you know, do the same thing where, you know, just keeping people from like, we want them charging down the lane as fast as possible and doing as much damage at the end, but we don't want any gutter balls. So like They do that. They prevent me from saying horrible things. They prevent me from spending thousands of dollars on prototypes for steampunk Mexican Civil War games, which were a thing that we tried once. That was great. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, everybody's got their blind spots as a designer. And so I might be able to help them with one aspect of it, and they can, I trust them and I love them, and they can tell me when I'm completely wrong about something in a way that no one else can, because other people I maybe don't respect their opinion because I have trouble doing that. Mm-hmm. So I respect them and I trust them and I trust their judgment. So it's really important.
When I was playing Hearts Blazing, one of the people I played with was like, this is a really pretty game. Like, who like did the graphic design in this game? Is there one of you, like, do you guys have like a real actual like business style? Like one of you writes and one of you designs and one of you is the webmaster and one of you is the accountant, or?
Well, I'm going to hold on for a second because I'm going to cry.
Oh.
So like we've been putting Hearts Blazing out and I've been on tenterhooks waiting for people's feedback on it. And the very first feedback we got was very negative. So for the past 2 days, I've been like super bummed about that. So that's great to hear. I'm glad that you had fun. Cool. But when it comes to design, me and my partner, Dan, were both did print production, graphic design stuff for like a decade. And that's kind of how we were able to do this, because we were making things in the middle of the night at the respective places that we worked that allowed us to cut out massive printing costs.
Oh, totally.
Meg comes from more of like the critique and RPG side of it, but also she understands how businesses actually work.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So doing stuff like becoming an LLC or not getting sued, she's great at that. She's also really good at, you know, coming up with weird role-playing games about superpowered kids at camp, which are, you know, just different stuff. You know, we each have our experiences that we bring to the table. But yeah, the Hearts Blazing stuff, one of the things that I do is whenever we release a game, I get a tattoo of the logo of the game. So I'm very invested in the logo of Hearts Blazing.
That's commitment.
Because I know we're, I know we're releasing it next. So I wanted something that looks cool. So we had this like blazing fire thing. Oh, that's, yeah, that's in the name. But yeah, we wanted it to be minimal, but not, again, in a shrewd way, like I want to put it up on a shelf in a game store and have people go, wait, what's that? It draws my eye.
Right.
I come from that kind of graphic design world. And so I don't need to like, we need a whole bunch of really badass looking dragons on this. Hell yeah. Like that's not like.
No shade to dragons.
No, I mean, dragons are great. Like that's, you know, I go to baddragon.com. There's nothing wrong with that site.
Can't we all?
So, but when you walk into a comic book store, you walk into a game store or whatever, because that's my experience with gaming is not like drive-through RPG or drive-through cards, which are both amazing sites that I really enjoy now. But coming up is you go into the game store, you go into the bookstore. Like I place a premium on that pop from the shelf, right? I want people to see it, but I don't want it to be, oh, look at that. That's the most badass dragon. I'm totally getting that game. Because that's exactly the type of person that I don't want playing my games. And we have those people. We have people that were just like, we don't want your money. Take it and go, like, go away. There's other games for you. Like, we're not interested in that. Like, we had people come up at, when we were at a booth at PAX or something, we would have people come up and pick up copies of Slash, and they would just be like, nope, no, thank you. And so we would just be like, okay, go away. Yeah, good.
And it's so important for people to know that before they even open the box, right? Like, everything's on the table.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a really great filter of the people I want to have back to, like, you know, my hotel room and the people I don't want to have back to my hotel room.
Let's talk. Can we just talk about Slash for a bit? So Slash, if anyone doesn't know, is the game of fictional matchmaking. It's the shipping game. It's the shipping news.
it's so I've worked up this. You want the whole like?
Oh, give me your fancy pitch. Put it down.
All right. So this is like my convention patter, which is Slash is Tumblr the game. And you'll get like a recognition in people's eyes of like, oh, I instantly get it. Or it's a card-based storytelling game of fan fiction romance. where you and other people at the table are trying to find the best relationships for different characters from pop culture, history, movies, film, and TV. And if you don't like someone who has been chosen by the matchmaker, you can pitch a story to blah, 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 blah. So it's like apples to apples with shipping, but our particular emphasis is on making stories, coming up with like ridiculous scenarios and things like that. And just, you know, it obviously can get really lascivious, but we want people to bring that.
Right.
We don't feel the need to provide it for
them.
And
you don't. I mean, it's just a box full of cards with names on it. And everything else just flows. And like the games that I have both witnessed and played in, there's been the occasional like, let's make these two characters smooch. But for the most part, people come up with just like strange, interesting questions. Like you got like, okay, we've drawn Swamp Thing and Swamp Thing is transitioning. And who is going to help Swamp Thing learn to apply makeup? Oh, it's She-Ra. Of course it's She-Ra. Fuck, of course it's She-Ra.
So we had the one of the first matches we ever had in that game was Draco Malfoy and Bumblebee the Transformer. And we had this vision of them not like being physical lovers mm-hmm. with each other, but being like road trip buddies. Just kind of like driving across Route 66 America, like visiting the different stops. So one of my friends, well, actually there's more than one person who does this, but they take Slash into their creative writing classes and they use it as prompts for people to tell stories. And that's the most amazing thing we've seen come out of the game, because that's what we want people to do. I guess this is a better way of saying, like, instead of we want people to see a table full of people having fun, like we want people to be, I'm trying to make things that get people to the same level of like hype and emotional response as I generate through mechanic. Like I'm trying to translate that to other people, like with Hearts Blazing, the kind of runaway story where like, you can have two or three beers and then describe a plot for a TV show that never happened and just like go on a tear for the next 15 minutes and go into deep, weird, intricate plots. Or like, you know, what if this song had this video where everyone's ice skating and then this, you know, the light comes down and the person flies up into the alien spaceship, like that kind of where you're just vomiting out in like insane creativity. And God bless if there is another person in the room who can meet you there. And like, then you just get this crazy spiral of insane ideas that is ecstatic. And that's really the only word for it. It's like just the idea that there's someone else near you who can like do that thing, you know, like be on that wavelength. Right. And that you can build off of each other. It's the same kind of electricity that is in good theater. Mm-hmm. Right. Good games do the same thing. And you can tell. Right. Because bad theater is the worst thing you'll ever see in your entire life. You'd rather see a baby hit in the head with a fucking hammer like than watch a bad musical theater. But good theater is fucking transcendent. Like it just takes you and transforms you inside and out. It's like being at the dentist today. Like there is a focus when they're like, they've like wrapped up my tooth and they're grinding down on it. And I can feel every iota of the drill bit on my tooth. I like the rest of my body disappears and I just become focused on that sensation. Good theater can do the same thing. Good games can do the same thing where they just, you lose yourself in that experience. And good storytelling is a really great shorthand for more than one person to get there once they can like feed off of each other. Mm-hmm. Like the kind of mania I'm displaying right now, yeah. Like see, go through to the person like that really motivates me to create tools to try and get people there, because then it helps me feel a little less broken. Right. Cause if anybody can get there, it's not that big of a problem.
You're putting a piece of yourself or a version of yourself out in the world as a game. You're like, here's me. And here's this like kind of weird habits that I have and this like weird mental state that I get into. And now you can have it too.
Yeah. And we all do. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, there's a theory that Our brains all work the same way. And then in between each of us, there is the constructs of language, right? What's in between language and understanding, right? There has to be this point where
Yeah.
a word stops being the word and starts being the meaning of the word for us, our consciousness to understand. So there's a really like this three states. So like when I say something to you, I've conceived it. It's gone through this transition from conception to language. You hear it, and then it goes through language to conception again for you. That skin in between conception and language is far more interesting than either conception or language, because it has to be inexact, right? Because Wittgenstein has anything to say about it. But that's like what I want to do with games. I want to take the experience and then translate it and then be able to give it to other people and sit in the corner and chew my fingernails and go, are they having the same experience that I've had or that I want them to have? I think that's what every director feels and what every writer must feel.
I think art in general is just this, like, I hope someone will understand what I'm feeling right now. I hope someone will understand what I'm going through right now. And you kind of have to accept at some point that you will actually never know. Like, you make something that makes you cry and then it makes someone else cry, but God only fucking knows why they're crying.
But if you as long as you're doing it together, like that's cool. Like that's really it doesn't I mean it doesn't have to be perfect, right? Because perfect is the enemy of good.
It was the enemy of done.
It's the enemy of done. But that's like expecting your significant other to be like just a version of you, right? That's not really complimentary or useful. That's just clonish and weird. Like you want them to be different but resonant. And I think really good games, especially really good story games and really good party games, especially provide you the tools to achieve that resonance with each other. Sure.
I'm so sad this isn't a video podcast doing the best faces. In Hearts Blazing, which we had a mixed experience of. I think
Okay, good.
like it was a prototype, and I can see, some, like, I have my proper feedback, which I won't give here. But in the rules, there's a ton of if that works, or if this feels right, do this. If your group wants to do it this way, try for that. Is there like a particular design philosophy behind that approach?
Yeah, I mean, I played AD&D Second Edition, and that game doesn't work. Just and so
Keeping it controversial here on the podcast.
it's
Everything my guests say is 100% endorsed by me.
like overly complicated systems are idiotic because there's no way that any human being could account for every possible scenario. So you don't know when it's going to break. You don't know when it's not going to work. It's the kind of thing that is less a science and more an art. So you have to hold on to it. Hang on loosely, as a 38 Special said, the seminal 1970s band. Like if you hold on to it too hard, the design and the rules and the mechanics, then it's going to fly out of your hands because you will something weird is going to happen, and then it'll be broken, and then you'll be broken because the thing you made wasn't right. But you shouldn't be trying to make things that are right. You should be trying to make things that are good. And the way that you make things that are good is like cooking. You put in the right ingredients and then you let people enjoy it the way they want to enjoy it. Like I baked some chicken tonight and my daughter immediately wanted to put ketchup on it. And that offends me because I bake a really good chicken. But at the same time, I'm like, that's how she wants to enjoy it. Who am I to say that's the wrong way to enjoy it? But at the same time, when you get food at another person's house or at a restaurant, you don't immediately put salt on it, right? Because that's insulting. That's kind of saying there's no way that you could get this right, and there's no way it's going to taste good. I need to immediately cover it or improve it with salt. You try it, and then if it works or if it doesn't work, then you make the adjustments that suit you. The artist doesn't know what the audience's translation of a color is or a sound is, right? They need to allow for that variability once it goes through the transition from artist to art to audience. And so we try and make that really clear that that's okay, because people get really, really, really hung up on it, that you're playing it wrong or you're doing it wrong.
Right.
And there's no, the way you do it right is the way that makes the time you spent not a complete fucking waste.
So yeah, I understand the idea of just like giving people permission. Yeah, that's something that I don't often see, but I think is like true, especially of like really new gamers where they're super freaked out about whether or not they're doing it correctly.
Yeah. And it's like, that's a young thing. Mm. Like that's a young fight to have when you're like, you're not following the rules. Like every game I haven't liked has probably involved someone saying that the rules didn't work or someone wasn't playing the rules correctly. Like that's not enjoyable. And life is too crazy and short to worry about shit like the minutiae of rules when you could just be having a decent evening. I mean, because what's the goal? The goal is to have a decent time, right?
But like,
whether it's through like pathos or ecstatic fun.
But sorry. I mean, ideally, a rule should be something that increases your level of fun, and a rule shouldn't be something that like it's going to make it less fun, but you have to follow it.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I think that's an absolutely brilliant way of putting it. But then why call them rules, right? Because then it gets into, I think people see rules and there's so much baggage that comes with that, and they think that it's limited and they think that they have to do X, Y, or Z. Like one of the concerns we've had with Hearts Blazing is that when we started it, there were like these cliches that you deal out from your hand to bid on different episodes or whatever, but they're all like things like walking away from an explosion and looking cool, or like, you know, kamikazeing your ship into another ship or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people felt very bound by it because we want to engage with rules, and that's something psychically very powerful about games and the ability to mock an experience, mock up an experience for another person, is that people will follow rules. Like intrinsically, we want to. We'll put some trust in it and then we'll just go for it. But sometimes like that urge takes over completely and we go, well, if these rules aren't completely comprehensive, I don't know what the fuck to do. Everything's going to fall apart. So in Hearts Blazing, we had these cards that come out and people would be like, do I have to do this thing? Do I have to fly my ship into another ship? Like, I want to use this card so we can all win together, but I don't want to fly my ship into a black hole. That's cool. Like, dude, don't fly a ship into a black hole, man. Like, have a good night. Like, hey, if flying your ship into a black hole is going to make like a really awesome story and you guys are going to have a ton of fun and there's a lot of payoff from that, yeah, totally. Fly your ship into a black hole. But because a card says, I flew my ship into a black hole, it doesn't mean you need to like write a book about flying your ship into a black hole. Like, chill out. You have some agency here.
Chill out. Rule one.
Just chill. Like, it's like a Dom sub thing. Like people want to give away their agency to another source of control.
Well, yes, because that's very gratifying.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
And like, I think a lot of games are kinky, and I think like just the idea of, I mean, never mind fucking Dungeon Masters and shit. Like just the idea of like, we're all agreeing to obey these rules, and even though these rules are like, it doesn't feel right or it doesn't give me exactly what I want right now, the promise is that the experience of following these rules in like a sort of gestalt, the overall experience will be much better than if you had skipped that one and gotten what you wanted right away. I don't know, my thoughts.
No, I think that's great. I'm just wallowing in that for a minute.
I mean, your example with the card is, if there isn't a way to follow it that makes your game more fun, like if there isn't some degree of interpretation or something or some different way to employ it, or you save it till later or whatever, if there isn't a way to play it and play it truly that increases your fun, then I would say it's not a very good card.
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't want to make bummers, right? So,
that is also very important to avoid bummers.
So when we made these cards, we're like, well, it's got to have cool shit for people to do, or people to, you know, on one hand, it needs to be a crutch for you if you don't have an idea. Mm-hmm. Because momentum is really important in storytelling, especially in like action, sci-fi, romance, or whatever. So it should provide you with some cheats, with some shorthands, mm-hmm. with some ideas when maybe you don't have one, but it shouldn't provide you with the only idea. And if you think that you have to do what's on the card, that's a failure on my part as a designer and not a failure on your part as a person with an imagination, because I haven't made it clear to you that it's okay. Like to do that, like have your own ideas. That's what, you know, I'm here to help everyone have to vomit as many ideas onto the table as possible. But yeah, no, I'm still stuck on the whole, like, rules are satisfying because someone else has control ideology.
We can just contemplate that for a moment. We can just think about that. formulate some delightful reply for me, Glenn.
Sorry, I'm just blushing. Yeah, games, right?
Games, so,
right? Like games, yeah. people read a rule book and the types of people that I've spent a lot of time with that I don't want to spend time with are the people who read that rule book and then get into a pedantic argument about how other people aren't following that rule book. Those people are bummers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be around them. I want to be around the people who are open to the rules being kind of, you know, hazy and inconcrete, or maybe it's like that. I think concrete is a pretty good metaphor for it, because it's like it starts out, you know, as soup, and then it forms like a good solid structure that you can really build something off of, right? So like that soup phase is really, really what's amazing about concrete, not the solid phase, because you could take a huge rock and carve it down. It would take a lot of work. You'd still get a solid thing. But the idea that we could make this substance that we can then pour into a frame and then we can manipulate it in different ways to kind of create the thing that we want, that's so much cooler to me than chiseling out, you know, Michael, like the mm-hmm. David from the stone.
That's cool. I like the concrete metaphor. And I like the idea of giving people something that's kind of amorphous and then saying, you know, put it into a solid shape, but it's whatever solid shape you want it to be.
Yeah, but at the same time, like I when I was in college, I had this really snarky, shitty idea that the reason that good art doesn't get made in Europe anymore is because they coddle artists.
That is awful.
I know, right?
That is so first year university. I can't handle it.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking bad. I also I wore very large jeans and played hacky sack a lot. Ugh, so
motherfucker.
Okay, so there is something to this idea that if you don't have constraints, mm-hmm. if you have total freedom, and if you're playing Minecraft creative mode, like if you are godlike in your capacity to create, you somehow are far less likely to create anything really resonant and meaningful. Like you might make something really grand, but it's easy to make something big. It's hard to make something elegant. It's hard to make the thing that works just right, or to make something beautiful. It's really easy to make something impressive. And quantity has a quality all its own. That's fine. But the thinking then was that in America, arts are completely shit on and not supported by the government. Like you can't be on the dole, like taking money and like being like, I make experimental theater on the subways of freaking Chicago. You're not going to get paid to do that. You need to find a way to live and do that at the same time. So you need to have some kind of crazy person passion to get that done. Because there's no way that you're going to make a living off of it. Like just that weird, terrible capitalist constraint of you need to somehow purchase food and get shelter while doing this thing filters out terrible people or people who are terrible at making art.
So what we should do for the arts is never support the arts. and be slowly consumed by the machinery of capitalism. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what the Theater of Pain was about? Like the idea that from great suffering comes great art. I don't know.
People only think that because they see some great art, and if there's suffering behind it, then they think it's worth more.
Yeah.
I think it works the other way.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think there's something to that struggle. Like, I don't know if I would make games that are interesting if I wasn't worried about how I'm going to feed my children.
So this is like a carrot and stick thing. You're a stick man, I see.
I think it's both. Like what makes my work worth doing is the people who say, like, this is good and I enjoy it and it's important and you should do it. And that's the carrot. But I can't do anything else. Like, I'm just not capable of being a productive person in any other field in the world. Mm-hmm. So I have a whip at my back of, like, you need to make a dollar off this. Like, it needs to work. And I think sometimes people, and maybe this is, like, I guess the major critique of academia is that, like, when you can create in that kind of uterine bubble of safety of, like, well, don't worry about it, because what's the big, you know, it'll be okay, you just make your thing,
not describe academia as safe.
No, there's a looming, like, publisher perish type of thing.
It's a fucking shark tank.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to be really contrary this episode. I really like it. It's really fun.
No, that's, I don't know. There's something about desperation that makes amazing things. And I don't know if all amazing things come from desperation or if all desperation creates amazing things, but I think there's a lot of amazing things that are associated with it. And that might be what works for me.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is your personal motivator. The combination of, like, being able to connect to people in a meaningful way and having them love what you do, and that just the hounds of despair chomping at your heels the entire time.
So, you know, games, right?
Games. Well, I think we should probably wrap it up there in terms of the episode. I feel like that feels like a really good stopping point to me. If my listeners want to hear more of your controversial opinions and interesting games, where can they find you?
Oh, I've fucked this up terribly. You could find us at gamesbyplaydate.com or on Twitter at gamesbyplaydate.
And they should all get in touch with you and get testing copies of Hearts Blazing.
Yes, they should, because it doesn't work the way that I want it to work, and it could be something great, and I need other people's help to do it.
Well, big thanks to Glenn for coming on the show, and as always, thanks to you heroes for listening. If you have thoughts on today's episode, and you definitely should, I would love to hear them. You can always send an email to backstorypodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Google+, that's Backstory Podcast, or you can tweet at me, @BackstoryCast. Also, if you use iTunes, please consider giving a rating or a review to the show. It really, really helps new people to find the show that way. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. You can go to oneshotpodcast.com to find more great shows like One Shot, Campaign, Modifier, and Talking Tabletop. Music for Backstory is provided by Uchiko. The track is called Thinking of You. If you like it, you can hear more at soundcloud.com/Uchiko. Talk to you later, heroes.